I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle, and I turned and looked, and it was already moving away, and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75-degree angle straight down, almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around. Go home.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Heretics. I've got a lot to talk to you about. Firstly and foremostly, I've started to realize, well, it's come to my attention that even though the podcast is now called Heretics, in some of your apps, when you click through, it still says the old stuff, On the Edge with Andrew Gold. And I suppose that's a little bit confusing, but it's no entirely bad thing. I suppose people might go, hang on, well, where was the Heretics? And they can't find it. It's just that I think it's Apple. They haven't seemed to update it. So I've got lots and lots of news and things to discuss. It sounds like there's something called discussing, and I'm going to de-escalate it. I'm going to discuss the conversation right now. As I imagine you guys in your cars or on a jog or a walk or sitting at home and having a little listen, a rare moment away from your other half or the kids and everyone shouting and screaming, just to have a little listen to a relaxing podcast. So I'm actually flying out tomorrow as I speak, at the time that you'll be listening to this. I'm probably on the plane to New York, where I will be spending a few days on vacation, as they say over there, or on holiday, as we say over here, before getting into the New York City area and Brooklyn, which is both an area of New York City and also the name of a child of David Beckham, named after where they conceived him, which is a bit of a weird reminder for him to carry about with him as he goes about the daily trials and tribulations of life, to think that he was named for such an act. Although we all have our parents to thank for that, and we all have such an act to thank for our existence, and we try not to think about it too much. So I'm happy I'm not named after wherever let's not even go that far. Watford? I don't know. So I'm going out, New York, and what's happening is basically Winston Marshall of Mumford and Sons, who left because he had retweeted Andy Ngo, who was seen by some as a far-right activist. He had retweeted something by him and had to leave Mumford and Sons, and now he is something of an activist himself, and very, very good, very interesting, bright guy. And he has put together something called Dissident Dialogues, and I'm speaking there. And that will be on the 4th of May. I am moderating a speech or a conversation known as or called Is This the End of Mainstream Media? Which is quite an interesting one. I'll be joined by the famous Thomas Chatterton Williams, who is a speaker and well, they're all, you know, speakers, aren't they? Dan Granger is in advertising, Michael Moynihan and Alex Berenson. These are famous American names in the sort of alt media sphere. Maybe not so known in the UK, but you'll get to know them if you fly out to New York to come and watch me moderate that. I've got all my questions ready, and I think it's a really interesting one, actually. As you guys know, I'm a bit peeved with the mainstream media, having been considered on the outside of it. And I'm going to talk a fair bit about the problems with some of the mainstream media issues today, I think. So that's happening really soon. And while I'm out there, you know, I can't just go to New York and not do a bunch of interviews. So me and my guest booker, Ash Meikle, no, it wouldn't work that way. It has to be my guest booker, Ash Meikle, and I, although I always, did he say it was Michael in the end? Don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's a good friend of mine now. And we're getting people together to get on the pod. And so far, we've got Colin Wright, who's a biologist. He's brilliant. His partner, Christina Buttons, is coming on. We're going to be talking. So a lot of that is going to be about the trans situation. But I also want to talk to Colin about something that I know he's really impassioned by, and so am I, which is that we've been talking for so long about the far left not seeming to understand basic biology and trying to magic think us into a realm of fairy tales where one can just change sex if one wills it enough. And we sometimes don't always think about the far right, which obviously has a similar issue when you get to the far ends of it. And there was this big moment, I don't know if you guys saw this, on Joe Rogan. And obviously, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because Joe Rogan, I think he gets 11 or 10, 12 or maybe 20 million, I don't know, like views overall, especially if you add all the clips together and the shorts. It's tens and tens of millions of views and listens. And many of you will be listening going, don't know, haven't heard it. What was that about? Don't know. But he had Tucker Carlson on. And Tucker, I don't get it. I just don't get it. And I hope this doesn't get out there, because if he ever wants to interview me, I'll jump on it, because I could do with the PR. But I don't get it. The guy just doesn't seem sane to me. And I know a lot of you will be listening and you'll feel let down by this. And a lot of you will be going, who's Tucker Carlson? And others will be going, oh, he's a guy from Fox News. And, oh, I love him because he was a free speech, whatever. I just think he's just, there has to be a difference, even if it is a fine line between those of us speaking out against injustices from an authoritarian woke left and others who are denying biology and physics and things. And he was on Joe Rogan just saying there's no evidence for the theory of evolution, and that's why they call it a theory, which is a total misunderstanding of what theory in that context means, and that it's all just God. And I just think in 2024, you can't be saying things like that. And I mean, Joe Rogan looks astounded. And I made a point on Twitter that Tucker Carlson is very much what people who don't listen to Joe Rogan think that Joe Rogan is. You know, I'm always saying, oh, Joe Rogan's this right wing, the religious fundamentalist lunatic, and the guy's a secular centrist atheist. He often says things that I don't agree with, and he said quite a few offensive things, and he said things about Jews before that I didn't very much like. But I think he's a net force for good, Joe Rogan. I think he's really good at what he does. He soaks up a lot of information from really smart people that he has on, and you really don't know how he's going to fall on a particular issue, which I think is a sign of an intelligent and curious individual. So I like Joe. I just think, you know, that Tucker Carlson stuff was mad. And it was a reminder to many of us who do try to push back against magical thinking that there is still an intolerant right. There is still a magical thinking right. And that needs to be spoken about. So I'm going to get Colin Wright on first to talk about the biological reality of what it is to be a man or a woman. And halfway through, I want to switch it up and say, hey, you know, what do we actually know about evolution? To what extent do I have to have it on faith? Because I don't know. I couldn't even prove that the Earth is not flat. Something to do with like a laser on a lake. But I don't have the wherewithal. I don't really have the inclination to bother to do it. I just have it on faith that we live on a sphere. And I feel quite comfortable with that bit of faith, as I do with that of evolution. But I would like to know firsthand from Colin what's actually going on. Maybe that's secondhand. I don't know. His partner, Christina Buttons, is brilliant as well. And she's going to be talking after him. We'll do a studio 1 hour each. And each of them can wait outside while the other talks to me. And with Christina, I think we're going to be talking about all sorts of teenage, I guess it's a little bit like that. What's Jonathan Haidt's book called? The Moddy Culling of the Human Mind? Hang on. I've written Jonathan Haidt, but it's Jonathan Haidt, the Anxious Generation. I'm going to put the Moddy Culling of our children. He's written an article called that. Well, I can't remember what his book is, but you all know what it is. About overprotecting children, giving too much credence and giving too much care to this mental health idea. Obviously, you know, you have to an extent, but have we gone too far and have we spread social contagion? And Christina Buttons is really, really good on that stuff. And we're going to be talking about Paris Hilton and all sorts of weird and wonderful things. Not that Paris Hilton is a weird and wonderful, or maybe she is a weird and wonderful thing, but she's not a thing because a thing is a possession. So that's really exciting. And then Mia Hughes, or is it Maya Hughes? I'll have to ask her that when I go to interview her. She is who did the research for the WPATH files, which came out just before the Cass report about the trans stuff. So the trans stuff, what's going on? Now, there's been a big move. There's been a big change. I don't know if you guys have felt it or seen it, but people are talking about the whole trans situation in a very different way. And I think the Cass report has a huge role to play in that. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with the Cass report, but this was this Cass woman, C-A-S-S, and she did a report and she spent years doing it. And she put a lot of investigative time into it and spoke to people on all sides. What was remarkable about it is that there were many gender clinics who refused to share their information with her. Basically, this is an absolute fuck up. I forgive me if there are children in the car, but there are worse things that can happen to children, as we know from the Cass report. I mean, it honestly, and I don't like jumping to conclusions here. It seems like what has happened is unforgivable and monstrous. I cannot believe it. And I keep thinking, hang on, am I reading this wrong? What's going on here? But it turns out that this very neutral report, about which loads of disinformation has been spread, that she's walked it back and she made up stuff or whatever, that none of that is true. This is her report and it stands. And it turns out she was going around and there was no evidence at all for the use of puberty blockers, that they were okay, that it could do any good for anyone. There was no evidence. They weren't checking up on people years after having puberty blockers and castration and things like that. So you're just taking children on their word that they feel like a man or woman and just changing them. And there was no evidence. There was no looking at anything. And what's remarkable is that anybody who tried to speak up was instantly fired, instantly got rid of, bullied out of their jobs. Anybody who said, hey, come on, let's not mutilate children. Right? So nobody could speak up. This was a stifling environment. And they were not checking up on anyone. And there does seem to be, despite what a lot of people say, a lot of detransitioners who are, you know, their lives are ruined. You don't get a second chance at life. Once you have that stuff done to you, that's it. And so and it's thought to be, I mean, I don't have the numbers to hand. I think what I read was just, oh, there's just quite a lot, you know, relatively large. Oh, no, I did know what it was. It was like 70%. Oh, this was it. 30. Right, hang on, I'm going to find it. You can't listen to a podcast while I'm just flummoxing around, can you? Hang on. Right, I was talking nonsense. It only seemed like a second because I've edited it together, but I've gone back to the actual article I read. Why don't I have that in front of me when I'm talking? I suppose I don't want to be distracted by words on a screen in front of me. But this was actually an article in The Guardian. I'm going to talk about the very fact that it was in The Guardian in a minute. There are no reliable studies for children or adults that could support claims of low levels of regret, because there were a lot of claims that very few people regretted transitioning. The studies often quoted have been criticized for using inadequate and erroneous data. The critical issue here is the fact that children and young people who were put on a medical pathway were not followed up. Studies suggest that the majority of detransitioners, a growing population who are having to deal with the consequences of having been put on a medical pathway, do not return to the clinics as they are very fearful of the consequences. The fact that there are no dedicated NHS, that's the National Health Service in the UK, services for detransitioners is symptomatic of the NHS's lack of concern for this group. Many live very lonely and isolated lives. I mean, the bullying was such, this was an article by David Bell in the Guardian, who was involved in the whole Cass report thing. The bullying was so egregious that people who were detransitioning couldn't even go back to the clinics and say, hey, actually, I want to go back. I don't want this. Can you undo what's been done? Now, I won't go into too much detail about this because I've spoken about it on the podcast a few times, but I do equate this very much to my experience making a documentary in Argentina about exorcism, because time and time again, these were 15 to 18-year-old girls, more than boys, who instead of believing they had some sort of gendered soul, believed that they had a demon inside them. And because the culture is different in Argentina, that's the way it went. Unfortunately, the reality is that adolescence is a very, very tricky stage for anybody, particularly young girls struggling to come to terms with their sexuality or how they are perceived sexually by others, by boys their age or whatever it might be, and the all sorts of insecurities about their bodies and what it is to become an adult. All those things are going through one's mind from the ages of, well, after puberty and into your late teens. It's a really tricky time. And we all know that teens, you know, anyone who's got a teenage child or my, you know, my half sister's 17, you know the kinds of things they go through. It's no easy thing. And adults are there to guide their children around the next corner, to show them what they can't yet see. And so if a child comes to you and says, oh, I'm struggling with all of these things. I don't feel right in my own body. I think I have a demon inside me and need to see an exorcist. I think you rightly tell them, you know, no, but let's take you to a therapist and let's try to get to the underlying problems here and to help you with something that will let you feel more in control of your life and not feel like there is a demon inside you controlling everything else and that everything's wrong with your body.
Hi, I'm Andrew Gold, host of the Heretics podcast, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, The Psychology of Secrets. When listeners began emailing me their darkest secrets, I wondered why they would trust me with such intimate information. In fact, why do we trust anyone with our secrets at all? This led me on a wild journey involving dangerous cults, an abusive exorcist, and one woman keeping the worst secret of all. It also starts with a murder. And it's all in my new book. That's The Psychology of Secrets, available to read now.
Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts.
A few decades ago, private citizens used to be largely that, private. What's changed? The internet. Think about everything you've browsed, searched for, watched or tweeted. Now imagine all of that data being crawled through, collected and aggregated by third parties into a permanent public record. Your record. Having your private life exposed for others to see was once something only celebrities worried about, but in an era where everyone is online, everyone is a public figure. To keep my data private when I go online, I turn to ExpressVPN. Did you know there are hundreds of data brokers out there whose sole business is to buy and sell your data? The worst part is they don't have to tell you who they're selling it to or get your consent. One of these data points is your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, my connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and my IP address is masked. Every time I turn ExpressVPN on, I'm given a random IP address shared by other ExpressVPN customers. That makes it more difficult for third parties to identify me and harvest my data. And the best part is how easy ExpressVPN is to use. No matter what device you're on, phone, laptop, or smart TV, all you have to do is tap one button to get protected. So if, like me, you believe that your data is your business, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN on the market. Visit expressvpn.com/heretics and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/heretics. Go to expressvpn.com/heretics to learn more.
But for some reason, those people, those very same people who would agree with me, I think, and say, oh, come on, yes, we'd tell the children not to go to an exorcist, when their kids come to them and say, no, it's not a demon, I've got a gendered soul,
I'm a girl, but I feel I'm actually, it's a boy's, it's the wrong body. I've got a sort of gender of a boy inside me. I think, you know, those adults also have to say, well, let's look at the underlying issues. Let's help you feel like you can get a better handle on your life, a better sense of control, because that's what you've lost right now. So the reason I'm bringing this up now, apart from the fact that the CAS report changed everything in the UK, is the fact that this article that I've read was in The Guardian. And for anybody outside the UK, The Guardian is the left-wing paper, and it is the woke paper, and it is the paper that has pushed for years and years this, what I think is a very dangerous trans ideology. Now, on the one hand, kudos to them for publishing an article in the face of new evidence that finally tells the truth about some of the problems here and the harm that's been done. On the other hand, where were you guys over the years when you were promulgating this very ideology? And where's an apology? When do you put your hands up, The Guardian? And this is happening all over the place. People are scrambling to paint themselves as not having been on the side pushing for the mutilation of children. That's how serious this is, and that's how much these new revelations and these new studies are changing things rapidly right now. We've got Have I Got News For You, right? To get that, again, for anyone who doesn't know, that is the topical show of Friday nights in the UK. I don't know the figures. They don't tell anyone, I don't think, but it's pretty much the most watched topical news show in the UK. And they, for years, didn't say a word about what was going. They smugly looked on while the likes of J.K. Rowling and Graham Linehan, who wrote The IT Crowd and Father Ted, were completely cancelled. Their lives turned upside down. J.K. Rowling's name taken off of trailers of Harry Potter. Just extraordinary things going on and happening to these people while the Have I Got News For You guys, who were the satirists of the day, just watched on smugly, laughing, you know, look at these bigots, that kind of thing. For the first time the other day, they joked, because it is a comedy show, they joked about the number of trans flags. Ian Hislop made some joke, oh, I don't know any of those countries, and you know, it wasn't very funny. And it shouldn't be funny, because ultimately, in allowing his show finally to make those kinds of jokes, he's admitting to the fact that he did nothing while J.K. Rowling and while Graham Linehan and many others, many you've never heard of, lost their jobs because they thought, I don't think it's right for 15-year-old girls to have their genitals turned inside out irreparably. I don't believe that one can be a man if they're not one. I don't believe in a gender ideology that seems to be saying, that seems to be very old-fashioned and saying, if you are a boy who likes to play with girls' toys, there's something wrong with your body. That's a fast move away from a progressive idea that I grew up with, that many of you grew up with, that if you're a boy and you want to play with Barbies, you go do that. You have fun. You enjoy yourself. There's nothing wrong with your body. You don't need to change that. Christ. So where were they? And again, I'm torn between this feeling of, well, let's welcome those people on board because it's the only way to defeat a dangerous ideology. And, you know, at least they're finally acknowledging that they were just disgustingly wrong. And then the other part of me is going, well, they're not really acknowledging it, are they? Because they're not apologizing. They're not saying, oh gosh, I got that so wrong. I'm so sorry to all the people who, you know. And even worse than that, you look at another one is James O'Brien, who runs a show on the radio. He's basically Jerry Springer, or if you're outside the UK, or Jeremy Kyle, of course, is another one, where he gets people who are not as well educated as him to call up so he can embarrass them on the phone. And he's super woke. And he wrote a book, How to Be Right. I mean, this is a guy who has no interest in actually solving problems. He's only interested in winning arguments, which with his superior education, he's often going to be able to do in the moment. But he talks utter nonsense. Nothing holds up to scrutiny, that he says. And he, the other day, again, there was a backtracking after pushing forward this monstrous ideology. Now, instead of saying, gosh, I got that wrong, he continues to blame the other side because he is only interested in being right. And I've heard a few people doing this. He didn't blame the ideology of the other side or anything like that. He said the problem wasn't the argument itself. It was the fact that it was the toxicity of everything. It was just the toxicity was the problem. The problem wasn't the castration of children. The problem was the toxicity on both sides. To which I would say, I mean, what a cop-out, firstly. Pathetic. Sorry, I'm getting annoyed. But, you know, the toxicity. J.K. Rowling, should we read out? I know you've heard this a million times, right? Let's find this. Hang on. I'm going to find J.K. Rowling's, what she actually said, and let's see where the toxicity's come from. Okay, this is what broke the internet. J.K. Rowling, 2019. Dress however you please. Call yourself whatever you like. Sleep with any consenting adult who'll have you. Live your best life in peace and security. But force women out of their jobs for stating that sex is real? Question mark. I stand with Maya. This was about Maya Forstetter, who had lost her job. She's a former guest on this podcast, who was sort of ousted because of her gender-critical beliefs. Now, did that seem toxic from J.K. Rowling? Because the world erupted. So where was the toxicity? And I don't want to say such puerile things as, the toxicity was only on one side. I mean, groups of people, of course, can be toxic. You will find examples on both sides of incredibly toxic conversation, the kinds of things that will be name-calling, doxing, you know, giving out people's addresses, just bullying, being brutish and horrible, putting everyone into one bracket when really there should be some nuance. All sorts of toxic behavior will occur on both sides of any kind of culture war or any kind of battle of ideas. But what J.K. Rowling said really wasn't toxic. And it wasn't just the toxic sides who ousted her, nor was it the toxic sides who ousted many others who lost their jobs. It was the likes of James O'Brien. It was the likes of Have I Got News For You, who did not stand by what she said and doubled down on her. So the problem wasn't the toxicity. Or if it was, the toxicity came from that very centrist dad, which I used to consider myself one of them, you know. It came from those people, the snobbish elite in-group mentality. And that leads me to another point. I had a philosopher friend of mine make a point to me, and it's a point that people in that kind of in-group snob kind of place keep making. And it's starting to wind me up a little bit. It comes from a place, again, of that sort of centrist snobbery of knowing more than everybody else. And they were sort of having a go at the sensationalist nature of some of my thumbnails and titles and some of the sensationalist places that I go to. And they said to me in an email, "I do find it worrying that serious people like you feel you are pushed to the more edgy stuff, not just because the mainstream media won't touch it, but because it gets hits and views. I know that it would be a good career move for me to be less balanced and more extreme, but I won't go there. How much is your hand being forced and how much are you chasing viewers?" That really wound me up because it does come from that sort of morally superior centrist place. Now, I actually am a centrist. I fall in different places depending on what it is. I'm pro-choice. I probably am a feminist in sort of the old-fashioned idea of equality. Whenever I can be, I'm a vegan. There's all sorts of things where I'm sure I differ from you guys, and I'm sure you guys are more progressive in other ways and less so in other ways. That's how a human being should be, a big mix of things, but open to other people and understanding of other people who have different values and made different choices. So I replied and I said to this person, I'll just say that it was so frustrating, this idea that I must be chasing views and readers and things. Now, firstly, of course I am doing that. I mean, I'm a podcaster. It's literally my business. But I chose the topics to cover. There is a fallacy that, covering the culture wars, that gets you more views. Well, I had significantly more views when I was covering Scientology and cults. So this was a choice. And to rebrand as Heretics, I'm earning significantly less because it's all in person. It's all beautifully done. It costs a fortune. And basically, the Heretic side of stuff is not earning anything. It's losing money each month. So this idea of like, you're just chasing views, It couldn't possibly be. And I think these centristy, snobbish people get themselves into a state of mind where they can't even imagine that the person who disagrees with them does so for anything but selfish financial reasons. I said to this person, I might flip your question on its head. To what extent do you avoid hot topics for fear of exclusion by your peers? Fear that you might be taken, as a serious academic with an immense body of work, less seriously. We know that, as sad as this may be, belief formation isn't exclusively guided by a desire for accuracy. Your convictions are incentivized, just as mine are, even if we're both also incentivized to believe we're the impartial one. What I'm saying there is that, you know, it's about your peers, and we tend to believe what they believe. And it's not just me, it's the person accusing me. I continued, I would argue that being able to judge others from a position of lofty restraint is a luxury. An Ian Hislop position. Hislop tutted at gender critics for years. He laughed along while many balanced individuals lost their livelihoods. And he is only now, years later, starting to satirize gender ideology. In so doing, he now walks a far safer path than the one that we extremists, as they would say, or view chasers, paved for him. It's all well and good doing so once the WPATH and CAS reports were already published and the NHS had banned puberty blockers. But where were the so-called moderates? How were you helping to shape the Overton window? That's the window of sort of acceptable ideologies in a certain society. When children's lives were being permanently scarred because of scientific beliefs as unsubstantiated as those of right-wing religious fundamentalists. Grayson Perry has admitted publicly that his cross-dressing is a sexual fetish. He was photographed wearing a huge black dildo at a children's cancer charity. Look that up. Yet, he is invited time and time again on Have I Got News For You to sit and chat with these lofty individuals while I'm disinvited from festivals for saying, never in a harsh way, that I don't think that male rapists should be sent to female prisons, as is happening in Scotland. This is just my opinion, of course, but for me, here's the real moral journalistic aspiration. To be able to risk ostracism and rejection by your peers in unflinchingly calling out abuses and absurdities, and doing so while continuing to expose the madness of the other side. I just tweeted today about Tucker Carlson's dangerous religious views on evolution. I've called out Joe Rogan for anti-Semitism in the past. I've been fervently pro-vax. I know that pisses a lot of you guys off, but anti-mask. And I went in very hard on Russell Brand. And these are all unpopular stances in the alternative media space that lost me views and clicks. The downside is that the only way to do this while actually making a living is to ensure my titles and thumbnails on YouTube are sensationalist. In that sense, I suppose I am compromised by financial forces. But my channel just about breaks even. I believe this is no more worrisome than the ideological compromises and restrictions I'd face were I at the BBC. Not that they would have me. The point being, this accusation all the time from those sort of BBC in-group people of, oh, you're in it for the money, you're in it for the money, kind of, and all of that. They have no idea about the financial forces of YouTube and what actually earns money, firstly. But secondly, in many respects, I trust someone who is financially motivated significantly more than somebody who is ideologically motivated. Now, it so happens that I am actually more ideologically motivated. You know, I do this because I believe strongly in the topics. That's why I moved over to this. But this idea that because you're some sort of centrist BBC person, you're not incentivized by anything, I mean, it's mad. These people at the BBC, these people at Channel 4 or the American equivalents or the other countries, all of your equivalents, they are extremely restricted in what they're allowed to say. And I think also by virtue of that, restricted in what they're allowed to think. Like I say, you form your beliefs and thoughts based on which beliefs and thoughts will help you in a certain situation. We don't want to believe that's true, but there have been loads of studies that show that it is. If you've got a group of friends who believe something, it's more likely you will as well, because something at the back of your mind is telling you, your unconscious is saying, hey, make sure you fall in line with these guys. Well, if you're at like the BBC, I mean, you can't say anything. You have to be so careful. And it just helps you then to tell yourself, well, I'm a bit above all of this toxic culture war lark. I'm above this. I'm just somebody who understands every side, all sides of everything. And the reality is, no, you're not. You're somebody who sat there quietly while things that were blatantly involving magical thinking were going on. Not to mention other kinds of atrocities around DEI and diversity, which were just horrific. All the kind of woke things, they just let slip. They just let it go, let it happen for years, telling themselves they were above it. And looking down at anyone like me, who was a sort of influencer or anyone alternative in an alternative space, who firstly had to do all of this on our own. We didn't have gatekeepers allowing us in the first place. And secondly, had to face, you know, without any backup from TV channels or anything like that, total societal ostracism. We've lost friends for speaking out on these kinds of things. And here they come 5 years later and start making jokes about it from our side as though they were there the whole time. So forgive me if part of me doesn't greet that, the fact that they've moved over to our side, that the mainstream is now on side with us, with utter glee. You know, if part of me is bitter and rancorous about this, even if the other part of me sees the bigger picture and sees that this will prevent further absurdities and atrocities from taking place. Speaking of DEI, as many of you know, I had this episode, my last episode, my most recent one, that is, with Eniola Aluko, who I love. I think she's, you know, she's great and she's become a friend, but we are ideologically utterly opposed. Not just in ideology and culture war, but I think in terms of how we argue, how we think critically, we couldn't be more different. I'd love for her to come hang out and we can play tennis. We were talking about that in private afterwards, and those kinds of things, and socially, because you should have social acquaintances and friends who think differently and argue differently from you. But wow. But that episode, I've got to say, it's only been at the time of talking, which is the day before this goes out. It's been one day. And it's had the trailer. I'm just going to double check now. Hang on. The trailer on Twitter, when I put it out on Twitter, has at the time, so it's going up fast, but it has 1.3 million views, which is extraordinary. I very rarely get anything more than 100,000. It's really going big there. And people are really getting angry at her. And that's a difficult thing. And that's why I like doing these kinds of podcasts, where I sort of level with you guys and speak with you guys about the behind the scenes and the reality of it. When you're doing a podcast like this, it's not the same as, say, you work for the BBC and your producer says, hey, today we've got Eni coming in. And I go, oh, who's that? Oh, well, she's there. And you have a little argument. This is my podcast. I rent this studio space. It looks beautiful. You should check it out on YouTube. It's really stunning. And get a filming team and editor and all these kinds of things. I have to do it all myself. I'm in charge of that, like, you know, my own show. And speaking with my guest booker, Ash, and with Eni months in advance, messaging from time to time, her saying, hey, I don't want to look, you know, is this going to be, well, I don't know what, I can't remember what she said exactly. What did she say? Just, you know, will I be able to watch this afterwards? She's used to the whole Sky Sports thing. And I'm saying, well, you can't really do that, but we're not going to edit anything out. It's just, it goes out as it is. But the point is, you build up a level of trust. You become friendly in some respects. Afterwards, was that okay? Yeah, you were great. You have this kind of conversation. And then I put it out, and the trailer on Twitter, I mean, there are nearly 1,000 comments beneath it. And I would say 99% of them are very, very angry at Eni because of her circular logic. And, you know, some of her arguments really were quite, I think, badly presented. And if I'm being harsh, I would say that, you know, I always try not to presume malice. But some of them were mean-spirited. I mean, for example, it's a big deal to Eni that that we know that she got the job on hard work and nothing else. And she gets upset that people don't believe her, and people didn't believe her when she said that the football manager was racist to her, stuff like that. But when I told her what happened to me, that I was told because I'm white, I wasn't going to be able to continue being on screen at the BBC, she just questioned it. Well, how do we know that's true? And it's just like, look, either we live in a world where we believe everything everyone says, or we don't, but you can't have it both ways. And by the way, you know, I don't think anyone should believe me. Unfortunately, I don't have anything but anecdotal evidence here and the statistics. I mean, the statistics show not, they don't prove that this happened to me, but they prove that it happens to white people because, as I say in the podcast, at the moment, what is it, 2.5% of the, 3% of the population in the UK is black, and over 8% of TV, you know, characters and just people on screen on TV are black. And so 2.5 times the number, which means there are 2.5 times fewer white people, which means that proportionately it is going to happen 2.5 times for every one person who's allowed on where you are qualified for the job as a white person, but you are not allowed to actually get it. So we know it happens. So I don't expect everybody to believe everything I say or believe that it happened to me. All I can give is my anecdotal evidence, which counts for not nothing, but not enough. But we do know empirically that this does happen to a lot of people, which means it's likely that I am being honest. And that's all I can do. That's all I can give you. Whereas any throughout the interview seemed to like the kind of or use first person evidence and anecdotal evidence for herself, but not to believe it when it was with other, when it was that of other people. So it was a little bit infuriating at times. With her, it was like, well, I worked hard and it was with me. It was, well, what about me? You know, I was saying. So it was frustrating. However, all that, you know, we all know people, we have friends and family who we love, who we are friendly, you know, who are really important to us, who we know are not good critical thinkers and who think they're better than they are at things and sometimes come across as a bit arrogant or misguided or whatever it might be. What we don't want for those people, as much as they might annoy us from time to time, is 1,000 horrible comments all poured at her at once. And that's just Twitter, by the way. On YouTube, at the time of speaking, it's had 55,000 views. That's the full episode. And again, I think, 2,000 comments. At the time, it's over 2,000 comments. So now 3,000 comments, the vast majority are horrible. Now, I think people are allowed to do that. And a lot of them are sensible. They say, gosh, you know, I went into this with this view and I came out with that and I don't agree with her. But some of them are just, you know, absolutely repulsive. Many of them call for her to be deported. I mean, these are racist comments. Some asked for me to be deported as well. They're saying, oh, a Jew and a black person. And I even replied to one, where would you deport me to? And he said, Israel. And I thought, well, you know, because I said, at least let it be somewhere sunny. But I said, why is a weird thing, Israel? Because I don't have any Israeli ancestry. Jewish people don't, you know, often come from Israel. My family are like four generations of Brits, I think, maybe five. I'm not entirely sure. And before that would have been parts of Europe for centuries and centuries. So I don't know why what I would be doing in Israel. And I'm certainly not sure what Annie would just be doing if she just got plopped in Africa somewhere. So you get these racist comments. I also did put up a tweet, though, saying, you know, this might be not a very popular opinion. But as a free speech advocate, I defend the right of this slug, who was a slug who, or just a person who had posted this horrible thing about me and Annie. He'd said, you're Jewish and she's black. You both need to be deported. I said, I defend the right of this slug and the many others saying similar things to say such things free from police intrusion. A free speech society will always have some small degree of racism. As bad as that is, it's far better than the alternative, creeping authoritarianism. It's up to the rest of us to show these racists up for the lonely cowards that they are. Also, I wonder where I'd be deported to. Hope it's somewhere sunny. But yeah, that's when he said Israel. But, you know, good for him. But it's a difficult one, because then I start to feel, having done what I thought was, oh, it's this interesting debate, we're talking about something together that doesn't get spoken about in such terms on mainstream TV. That's what I want to offer the world. I'm happy with how this is going. Loads of people seem to enjoy the episode. But then I'm feeling like, oh gosh, have I started some sort of pile-on here? Did I know what I was doing? Did I know it would be this one-sided? Or is it even that one-sided? Maybe it's only one-sided because it's my viewers and my listeners. And if it were hers, they'd maybe be having a go at me more. I really don't know. So I don't know where I stand on that, except that it gives me a sad feeling. You know, nobody wants to see that level of it. I think each person that puts up a bullying comment doesn't really think about the combined horrible feeling of all the comments put together. So I don't know. For now, she said that she's off Twitter, and I hope that she sticks to that. And I said to her, please don't read all the comments because it's just no good. But that said, I do think in that particular interview, she was out of her depth. I think there's a lot that she, just like the whole mainstream media that I've been talking about, just didn't consider. Because when you're in that bubble, and I'm not talking about any anymore, I'm not talking about Eniola, when you're in that kind of bubble and all your friends are in that bubble and everybody's just clapping, well done, good presenting on that show you were on mainstream TV, the assumption is, the starting point is that anybody who disagrees, anybody who has a different view is a right-wing lunatic. Even if most of your views are left-wing or centre-left or just fairly libertarian and centrist, they must be stupid because otherwise they would be here in the BBC studios with me. That's what they think. And then they go and meet real people in the real world. And they go, real people say, you know, we're not racists, but we know that DEI is actually really a toxic kind of ideology. We know that we're not transphobic. We're actually very much pro gay rights and pro LGB issues. However, this trans issue is actually quite worrying for many, many valid reasons. And you can catch these people off guard sometimes because they just haven't seen that there are real people, like all of you listeners, who are just normal, nice people, most of you, who have legitimate concerns. They cannot, for the life of them, even imagine that. All they imagine is them and their bubble, and outside of that, tinfoil hats. And Andrew Tate and Tucker Carlson. And that's it. And that is a huge problem because these are the guys running the media or the mainstream media in the UK. So it's very worrying. Listen, I'm going to be in New York, as I said. I'm talking at Dissident Dialogues on the 4th of May. It's probably too late to get tickets. I don't know. Do check it out. But if you are going to be there, if you're there or whatever, give me a tweet or something, let me know, or come up to me, because my thing's at, I think, 1:30 or something on the Sunday. It's all up on the Distant Dialogues website, the agenda. And I'm happy to sit around for a little bit afterwards, say hello to some people, especially if you've got my book. If you haven't yet, do get it. You've still got time. Even if you're in America now, get it from amazon.co.uk. Or get the signed, well, no, you don't need the signed one because I'm going to sign it for you if that's the case. Amazon.co.uk, or there's also Blackwell's Bookshop. Go to both of those, either one. You can get it shipped out to the States, or if you're in the UK, get it there and then come to the States to come to this. The Psychology of Secrets, My Adventures with Murderers, Cults and Influencers. If you have read it, if you've listened to it on Audible, any of these things, please leave a review on Amazon.co.uk. I got quite a few in the first few days, and then it got stuck at 39. So I've had 39 ratings. There was 38 of them were 5-star. So that's pretty cool. If you're enjoying it, please, please do review, because I need loads of these. I need hundreds so that Amazon starts to recommend it to more people. So I'd very, very much appreciate if you take a few minutes out of your day to just go on amazon.co.uk, find The Psychology of Secrets, and give it a review. But as I was saying, yeah, get your copy, bring it along, or just bring whatever along, take a photo or whatever to Dissident Dialogues. I will be there 4th of May at 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. You know, that, check the agenda on there. And I am working round the clock to try and find a bookshop or festival or anything that will have me there without concern about my controversial views. I'm still not allowed in these places, even though Grayson Perry, the man who wears a dildo to a charity, is allowed in all these kinds of places. He's encouraged to be there. But I'm trying really hard to find stuff in London. I might try and find something in Bristol. Eventually, I'd like to find a place in Dublin, and I'll start to look at more different cities and things. But for now, Dissident Dialogues on the 4th, 1 or 2 p.m. Come find me. I'd love to meet you. I'll sign your book if you've got it, The Psychology of Secrets. Please review it. And I will see you next time.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.